Welcome to Question Period. I'm Evan Sullivan. On the show today, hot air.
The United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord.
Can Donald Trump really pull out of the Paris Global Climate Agreement? How will Canada respond? The Environment Minister, Catherine McKenna, joins us today with reaction. Plus, the Trump tab adds up.
We will not stand idly by as hardworking Canadians suffer.
Canada gives an $860 million package to help the softwood lumber industry after Trump's billion-dollar tariff. Is it time for Canada to retaliate? MPs are standing by to debate that. And then, pipe dreams?
It's a federally approved project, and a change of government doesn't change that.
Is Justin Trudeau really going to push through the Kinder Morgan pipeline, even if a new government in British Columbia says no? BC's NDP leader, who looks to be the next premier, vows to stop it, and he joins us today. All that plus a distinct mistake. Why is the Premier of Quebec reopening the divisive debate about a distinct society? Will this unleash the sleeping forces of separatism? The Scrum weighs in on that today, and we'll have all the highlights from last night's press gallery parliamentarian dinner in Ottawa. This is Question Period. Let's go get some answers.
As someone who cares deeply about the environment, which I do, I cannot in good conscience support a deal that punishes the United States.
Donald Trump's blockbuster announcement that the U.S. is pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord had strong reaction around the world. French President Emmanuel Macron condemned the U.S. action, and then he appeared to troll Donald Trump's famous motto. Check it out.
Make our planet great again.
Meanwhile, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau called President Trump and said he was disappointed with the decision. But for Canada, this is a much more complicated moment. After all, this week, the Canadian government announced it was setting up an $860 million bailout package for the softwood lumber industry. That after the U.S. slapped a billion-dollar tariff on Canadian lumber exports. Meanwhile, we're getting set to renegotiate NAFTA. So, how will Canada now react? Let's find out. Joining me now, the Minister of the Environment and Climate Change, Catherine McKenna. Were you surprised by Donald Trump's announcement? And, you know, he did the reality TV lead up to it that the U.S. was withdrawing from the Paris Climate Agreement.
Well, we were certainly very disappointed. It had been a bit unclear what the position the U.S. was going to take, and we'd been very active, Prime Minister at the G7 meetings, but also me, the Foreign Minister, just making the case that the Paris Agreement is a good deal for the U.S., it's a good deal for Canada, it's a good deal for the world. So let's take advantage of the economic opportunity of a low-carbon future. But clearly, that message didn't resonate.
Not only did that message not resonate, he made the opposite case, that it's a good deal and it's helpful. He said that the Paris Climate Agreement will kill 2.7 million American jobs by 2025, 400,000 manufacturing jobs. By 2040, the average American, he says, will lose $7,000 annually, 6.5 million jobs, and it will kill the what he calls the clean coal industry. Those are his figures. He said all that. Is he right?
What we saw the reaction from U.S. business, it was very negative. So everyone from Goldman Sachs to Elon Musk to the CEO of GE saying that pulling out of the Paris Agreement was bad for U.S. jobs, it was bad for the U.S. economy, it was bad for U.S.
So
business.
So where is he getting these numbers? I mean, he's the president of the United States. He's saying this is a massive transfer of wealth out of the U.S. that will kill jobs, 2.7 million American jobs. Where is he getting that data?
I don't know. Look, we get our own data, and I listen to people like Mark Carney, the governor of the Bank of England, former governor of the Bank of Canada. He calls it a $30 trillion opportunity for clean growth, and Canada is going to be taking advantage of that.
Can they legally withdraw right now and begin a renegotiation?
No, you can't withdraw from the Paris Agreement. It takes 4 years, the process. And you can't renegotiate the Paris Agreement. It's in force, although 90% of the rules remain to be negotiated. I've made this case to my American counterpart that better to be at the table and be negotiating the rules, negotiating the rule book, because that's what we're going to be doing. And next week, G7 environment ministers, you'll see that the ministers were aligned, that we understand that this is the right thing to do for our kids and grandkids. We have one planet, but that we also have an economic opportunity, and we're going to move forward, even if the U.S. is going to step back, we're going to step in because it's an opportunity for us.
Okay. What exactly will you tell Pruitt? I mean, you heard Macron, the leader of France, say, make the planet great again, kind of trolling Donald Trump on his key message. What exactly will you say to Pruitt?
Look, I mean, we're going to have a conversation around the table. And so we're going to all say, you know, we think that the Paris Agreement is a good deal for the U.S. and a good deal for the world, and that you're going to miss out.
That's it? They go, great. Are you open for renegotiation? If they say, great, let's renegotiate. Is there any negotiation?
As I said, you can't renegotiate the Paris Agreement. It's in force.
Okay. The conservatives are already saying Canada's now, okay, they're out of the Paris Climate Agreement. There's not going to be a price on carbon there. You've now really seen how Donald Trump and his administration works. What about Canada? Will this start hurting our economy?
No. We've been working very closely with provinces and territories and businesses, and I was talking to the big city mayors. Everyone's all in. We recognize that we need to take action. Well, we need to take action to protect our planet, and we need to be smart about it. And so we've always worked very closely with business. Business supports our actions. As you saw in the United States, big businesses are saying it's smart to take action on climate change. We're going to provide the certainty business needs. We're going to work with them on smart ways to reduce emissions and also grow our economy.
Okay. The Trump tab is starting to add up here because this week, the Canadian government put $860 million to help out lumber mills, more than 130 communities that are going to be affected by or have been affected by the $1 billion tariff that the U.S. slapped on B.C. softwood lumber. Now, every time we take this to a neutral dispute mechanism, a court, Canada wins, the United States loses. Meantime, though, we're paying, the taxpayer, the citizen is paying $860 million to help out in industry. So far, all we've heard is talk from your government. When will there actually be retaliation?
Well, I mean, first of all, we're always going to vigorously defend our interests. You've seen our foreign minister. She has been out there vigorously defending our interests at every possible opportunity. We're certainly going to support our forestry sector. These are people, these are jobs, these are communities that rely on it. And as you say, in the end, we always are in the right in terms of where we stand.
But we're out of pocket. I understand that. I guess my question is, we've said we'd retaliate on thermal coal. Is Canada talk, or will we walk the walk and start retaliating so we don't get bullied by the Trump administration?
So our foreign minister is looking at every possible option. I have full confidence in her, and she's going to vigorously defend our interests at all possible opportunity.
The great grand bargain of your government was, in exchange for a national price on carbon, your file, we will green light some pipelines. That will help Rachel Notley in Alberta because her political fortunes depend on, you know, capping emissions. I accept the price on carbon, but give me a pipeline. So you green light the Kinder Morgan. And now the BC and British Columbia, you know, post-election, it could be that we're seeing a government that's the Greens and the NDP. They are against the pipeline. Is Kinder Morgan dead?
We stand with our decision. We believe it was based on science and evidence. And so we're not, you know, turning back the clock on our decision, and we're going to explain why we think that this is in the best interest of Canadians. This has not changed, but we're going to work with every government, that, you know, so we're going to wait and see what happens
in
BC.
You have the legal power as a federal government to say, I'm sorry, this is our jurisdiction. Thanks a lot. You can try to gum up the works. We're going to put our shoulder to this and get that pipeline through. No more consultation. We've done the consultation process. Will you use that option, the federal option, and make sure that pipeline goes through?
Our decision is our decision, but we certainly believe that it's far better to work with provinces than work against them. So we're going to be, you know, reaching out to, first of all, we have to wait and see what happens in BC, but making the case that it is good for British Columbians and this is good for Canadians because it's good jobs, and we also are taking very serious action to tackle climate change.
Okay, last question. Has the U.S. abdicated their leadership in the global world when they made this announcement about Paris? In your view, was that a not only a speech about the environment, but was that a speech about how Donald Trump is repositioning the United States as a more isolationist, country and that you say Canada will step in, are they abdicating a leadership position?
Well, they certainly abdicated a leadership position on climate change, and Canada is, the U.S. is stepping back, and Canada is going to step forward.
All right, I got to leave it there. Mr. McKenna, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And as I always mention, I've known Catherine McKenna for years before she went into politics. When we come back, should Canada now retaliate against Donald Trump's trade action now that the bills are starting to add up? MPs are standing by to debate that. Stay with us.
Canada is deeply disappointed with the U.S. position. The Paris Agreement is a good deal for Canada, and it's a good deal for the world.
Welcome back to Question Period. Well, Canada and much of the world were not only disappointed that Donald Trump pulled the United States out of the Paris Climate Accord, but what can the country actually do about it? Should Canada now rethink its own national price on carbon? To find out, I'm joined in Vancouver by Jonathan Wilkinson, the Parliamentary Secretary to the Environment Minister, who is just on the program. Here in Ottawa, we have Jerry Rich, the Conservatives' International Trade Critic, and the NDP MP, Nathan Cullen. Good to have all of you,
great to be
you
here.
I got to start with you, Mr. Wilkinson. The U.S. is pulling out of the climate agreement. Is this deal going the way of Kyoto? Is this done?
No, I don't think so. I mean, obviously, we're very disappointed with the decision that was taken by the president. But the collective voice of the world has said that we are going to move forward. 195 other countries intend to continue to move forward with respect to ensuring that we address what is, you know, the critical issue of our generation, which is addressing climate change in a strong, substantive, and thoughtful way.
The targets the Trudeau government had set are essentially the same targets,
yes,
in terms of emissions as the Harper government.
Yes.
Okay, so the Harper government, the Conservatives were okay with the climate agreement, right?
Yeah, well, until they added in carbon taxes and a few other things.
So should the response be stay in Paris or what? What should Canada do now? Dump the carbon tax?
I think it's time for some solid reflection on what exactly you can do moving forward. If we don't have a North American structure, it's going to put all of our business at risk. It's going to keep sliding south as they go to a lower tax, lower regulatory regime. Showing some leadership, absolutely. The targets are set. We support the targets. But going beyond that,
and now that we have... Like the price on carbon.
No. That's beyond what our targets were going to Paris. The carbon pricing is added to that now and sort of puts us offside.
Okay, well, what do you think, Nathan Cullen?
Well, I agree a lot with what Jonathan had to say. There's a lot of global momentum to this. What I would add is that while disappointed, I don't think anyone's really surprised, are they? I mean, the way Trump campaigned...
It's not a surprise, but it's consequential.
It is consequential. I mean, China came out with a very strong statement immediately after many of the European leaders, Canada and so on. I suppose, there's some global realities here that the power shift away from the United States as a global player is continuing. But in terms of Canada, Jerry's pointed out that there may be some competitive disadvantages, but I'm seeing the effort move to the state and the city level within the U.S. So for Canada, I don't think our targets are very good, frankly. I don't think Trudeau picking up Harper's carbon targets was what Mr. Trudeau kind of campaigned on, but okay. I don't think the plan in place in Canada right now is sufficient, actually, to meet even the Harper's targets, and that's according to Environment Canada's own.
Let me go back to Mr. Wilkinson, because you're in Vancouver, and of course, tied in with all this stuff is two issues. First of all, Trump's slapped the $1 billion tariff on softwood lumber, and now your government has put an $860 million aid package. I know you got to be careful what you call it, because you know, if you call it a subsidy, then you'll get blowback from the U.S. Mm. It's an aid package. I guess my question is, now that the taxpayers are going to be on the hook for close to $860 million, when will your government actually retaliate against Mr. Trump?
Well, I think first and foremost, we're working to ensure that we actually are providing the support that is required to the forest products industries that have been hurt by what is a completely specious set of duties that have been applied by the United States. The United States has lost time and time and time again in trade tribunals with respect to their accusations with respect to our forest products industry. We are moving to ensure that we're addressing some of the gaps that actually that exist at this stage, particularly around things like cash flow, to ensure that we are sustaining the companies and the 300,000 workers that actually exist within this industry.
I represent a forestry district. I'm hearing from the mills up and down the line. I've got one small mill owned by a First Nations community. 50 people go to work there. They got a bill from Trump for $400,000 for back owed these fake tariffs. Yeah, so they went back and said, send us $400,000 if you can't trade into the U.S. I want to know if their aid package that the Liberals came up with, aid package, help, whatever you want to call it, is enough to keep those companies going through this time. Yeah, Canada wins at all these tribunals. We've won for decades. But do we really win? I mean, the Americans shut down Canadian mills. We've lost 30,000 forestry jobs.
So just what do you do in response to that, Jerry? Well, I mean, that's the question. I mean, the consequences are here. Yeah. Now the Trump tab is real. Now it's adding up.
Sure.
What do you do?
Well, we've sat back for 18 months and did nothing. That's true. There was that 1 year of negotiation time that was there, the legally defined. A year ago, we said, we heard in the House, 100 days, that's all we need.
That's
between
right.
Trudeau and Obama, the bromance is going to get this done in 100 days. That's a year ago. It didn't happen. So there's been no plan up to this point. We all knew this was coming. We all knew it was going to hurt. We all knew the depth that it was going to hit because we've been to this rodeo several times. But at the end of the day, there's no plan. There's no allies being built in the U.S. to help make the fight with us.
So what do you do now? Do you retaliate?
Well, you don't just go to Washington. You go to the
governors.
The governors, the state legislators, everybody who's trying to build housing. There's going to be a million new homeowners in the U.S. that can't afford to build a house this year because of this.
Right.
Okay, let me get Mr. Wilkinson, because I really want to get a last minute on a pipeline. Mr. Wilkinson, real quick, is this enough?
I mean, this government has been working actively on this file. The previous government essentially let the agreement lapse.
That's not
We've
true,
been working
John, and
actively
you know
on this file over the course of the last 18 months. We are working at all levels in the United States to try to ensure that they actually understand the impact that this is
going
to have domestically. We have moved very aggressively to ensure that we are addressing some of the critical needs of the forest product communities that are out there. And I think that the Canadians appreciate the work that's being done, and there's more that needs to be done going forward. And we intend to do that.
If that strategy were working, then that strategy would be working.
Sure.
And resolving the deal and helping out those local communities.
Okay, real quick, I want to go around. The last question is the pipeline. The future of the Trans Mountain, the Kinder Morgan Trans Mountain Pipeline, which is important.
Keystone's good.
Keystone's going through. The Kinder Morgan Trans Mountain Pipeline, the future's in jeopardy. That would run from Edmonton to Burnaby, B.C. If there is an NDP Green government, if Christy Clark falls in, and it could happen within a number of weeks, that pipeline's dead. The federal government has the jurisdiction to force it through. Is Kinder Morgan dead?
If the only option that Trudeau seeks is to force a pipeline through British Columbia, that's a constitutional nightmare, a political nightmare for this government.
Why is it constitutional? They have the law in America.
It's a constitutionally correct political suicide, because it wouldn't just affect voters and communities in British Columbia who would say, whoa, wait a second, Ottawa's going to impose its will with a bunch of bulldozers in the army, as the natural resource minister intoned when he was in Calgary? Well, maybe we need to call the army. It also would affect other provinces who say, what kind of government is this? You know who you don't hear from much on this? Is Liberal MPs from British Columbia.
Well,
we just had a whole day of debate in the House.
But real quick, it is not a constitutional crisis, Jerry.
Not those commons.
Constitutionally, the government has the right to push
it through. It's going to be a court case. Catastrophe. They're going to tie this up in court forever. So the federal government can take a pass and say it's before the courts, we can't do it. He's trying to walk both sides of this picket fence, and you know he's going to get impaled on it.
All right. Mr. Wilkinson, the opposition, one side says put your shoulder in it and invoke the federal constitutional powers to push it through. The other side says you can do it, but it's political suicide. What are you going to do?
Look, we intend, if in fact this new government comes into place, to sit down and work constructively with them on a range of files, including this one. I would tell you that we made the decision with respect to the Trans Mountain Pipeline based on a program that brought in a strong and ambitious climate plan. The facts on the ground have not changed, and so the government intends to see this through.
Okay. The facts on the ground, I should just say, the political facts on the ground have changed. There could be a new government there, and we're going to talk to potentially the next premier coming up. Jonathan Wilkinson, Jerry Ritz, and Nathan Cullen, I want to thank all of you for joining us.
Pleasure.
And speaking of British Columbia and the wild politics there, potentially this guy is the next premier, John Horgan. He's the leader of the NDP, and he will join us next. Is he willing to negotiate with the federal government? As Mr. Wilkinson just said, we'll find out. That's next on Question Period.
An
And mark my words, that pipeline will be built. The decisions have been made, and it is in the best interest of Albertans, Canadians, and in particular, might I say, British Columbians.
Well, there it is, the Alberta Premier's message to her BC NDP colleague, John Horgan, is very clear. Do not block that pipeline. This is shaping up to be maybe the blockbuster fight of the summer. On one side, you've got Alberta's NDP Premier Rachel Notley and Justin Trudeau. They want to build the Kinder Morgan Trans Mountain Pipeline from Edmonton to Burnaby, BC. On the other side, you've got the BC NDP who just struck up a partnership with the BC Green Party, and they are poised to seize power from the BC Liberals, who are just one seat short of a majority and whose government could fall within weeks. If he does become the next premier, what will John Horgan do about the pipeline and other issues? Well, let's find out. John Horgan joins us now. First of all, thanks for joining us on Question Period.
Good morning, Evan.
Is the Kinder Morgan pipeline dead if you become the premier?
Well, certainly it's a divisive issue in British Columbia and one that we've been following for a number of years now. In fact, going back to 2011, 2012, when Kinder Morgan started accelerating their plans to twin the existing pipeline. It's a divisive issue, and we know now that a number of First Nations in the Burrard Inlet area are already in court. The Tsleil-Waututh, the Musqueam, and the Squamish Nations do not want to see this pipeline proceed into their territory. The city of Burnaby, the city of Vancouver are big players in British Columbia, of course, and now we'll have a government of New Democrats and Greens that are concerned that the impact of a sevenfold increase on tanker traffic through our major metropolitan area, through the Salish Sea and up the Strait of Juan de Fuca is not in our interest, and we're going to be absolutely clear on that.
Okay, let me try to be more clear. Is the pipeline dead? If you become the premier, are you going to say no and try to block that pipeline? Because you know the federal government has the jurisdiction to ram it through if they want. They've got the constitutional power. Would you let that happen?
I understand the position that Mr. Trudeau is in. Rachel Notley is a friend of mine. We've agreed to disagree on the pipeline issue. We have many other issues of agreement. But on this fundamental question, British Columbia's interests have to come first for me.
Okay, the Environment Minister just on the program, Catherine McKenna, she said she'd be willing to negotiate with you on that to make sure this pipeline goes through, get that so-called social license. Would you be willing to negotiate with the federal government to try to get a Kinder Morgan pipeline twinned?
I'm anxious to sit down with the Prime Minister to talk about a range of issues. First and foremost for me would be, of course, softwood lumber. I was excited to see the federal response late last week to the what is going to be a looming crisis in the forest sector here in British Columbia. 50% of the trade between Canada and the U.S. on softwood is a result of B.C. forests and B.C. workers, and I want to ensure that we have a clear understanding that the federal government is going to be there for B.C. workers, and we're going to be aggressive on that trade file. There's a whole number of issues that I'm excited to work with the Prime Minister on. Housing, the fentanyl crisis, the list is
much longer
that we agree on than those that we disagree.
Just tell me, are you willing to negotiate so there's still a possibility that you would also accept that pipeline?
I will address that when the opportunity presents itself, Evan. I've laid out how the First Nations in the region and the two mayors and the major cities in the Burrard Inlet feel about this. I'm going to consult with the Attorney General's Ministry upon forming a government and look at our legal options at that time. We have a number of other tools in the toolbox when it comes to permitting, and we'll follow through on those. I'm happy to sit down with the Prime Minister at an early opportunity to talk about pipelines, to talk about softwood, to talk about fentanyl, to talk about childcare, housing, and on it goes.
And I assume you'll be dealing with Donald Trump on softwood lumber, on energy issues. If you become the Premier, I guess he's an early visit for you, right?
Well, I made it quite clear in my election campaign that one of my first orders of business is to go to Washington and make it clear. Rachel Notley's gone to protect the interests of Alberta. Brad Wall is gone to protect the interests of Saskatchewan. We need to have a BC representative making it abundantly clear that we have had a positive working relationship with the United States for many, many decades, and we want to continue that. But we're not patsies here, and we have cards to play, as I say, the Columbia River Treaty being first among them.
All right, John Horgan could be the next Premier of British Columbia in the next couple of weeks. We are watching that very closely, sir. Thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Evan. Appreciate it.
Coming up on Question Period, the U.S. joins Syria and Nicaragua as the three countries who have now opted out of the Paris Climate Accord. Is that good or bad for the economy here in Canada? The Scrum is next, and our special guest from New York, MSNBC's host, Ali Velshi, joins us. Stay with Question Period.
As of today, the United States will cease all implementation of the non-binding Paris Accord and the draconian financial and economic burdens the agreement imposes.
And with that, President Donald Trump made the case that the Paris Climate Accord is a job killer and the U.S. is out. What does that mean economically and politically for Canada and the rest of the world? What does it say about the U.S.'s role around the world? To find out, the Scrum has convened with Stephanie Levitz from the Canadian Press. Joyce Napier, CTV's Ottawa bureau chief, is also here. Craig Oliver, CTV's chief political commentator, is here. And our special guest is Canadian, who has gone south, Ali Velshi, co-host of Velshi and Rule on MSNBC. Good to see all of you. And Ali, let's start with you. What has been the reaction, not only in the U.S., but throughout the world, to the Trump administration? I don't think it's the most surprising decision, but nonetheless, a consequential decision to dump out of the Paris Accord.
Yeah, most of the world has expressed a great deal of surprise and dismay at the U.S. decision, although in an interview with NBC's Megyn Kelly, Vladimir Putin said that, you know, one shouldn't be judgmental of the United States. I think we got some signs of this, though, prior to the NATO meeting and after the president's senior advisors, Gary Cohn and H.R. McMaster, penned an op-ed the other day in which they described Donald Trump's worldview as being one of competing interests, not a global community. So he articulated that in a very, very dark speech on Thursday when he announced the pulling out of the U.S. from the Paris climate deal. And he really did create a straw man. He made the Paris deal sound like something where almost 200 countries in the world other than the U.S. got together to somehow diminish the United States' prosperity and power in the future.
This was the most important symbolic act yet in demonstrating a failure of American leadership globally, a retreat from the world, lifting up the drawbridge, turning toward American isolationism, and as part of this, satisfying the Russians with the kind of foreign policy he's doing, with his dealings with NATO, his dealings with the rest of America's allies, and handing over mainly to China. China on climate, China on trade.
He's abdicating leadership. Stephanie.
Yeah, I mean, I would pick up on what Craig did there. I think from an environmental point of view, you know, the jury is out on whether or not the U.S. government, federal government, pulling out of the Paris Accord actually, from an environmental point of view, does it have significant ramifications? We've seen a lot of states, you know, step up, a lot of major industries step up. So this will be a real test of the private sector and how committed they are. But on a political level, it's about what kind of America does Trump see? What kind of role does he want America to have in the world? And he's clearly signaling he doesn't want one. Because this is the type of thing that requires leadership. Whether or not the U.S. federal government under Trump would have acted to bring down emissions, well, that's neither here nor there. It's probably not, is the answer. No is the answer. So he had to pull out for that reason. But it's about leadership. Does he want to be a leader on the world stage? And I think he's clearly signaled with this, the answer is no.
Well, and as Ali Velshi points out, Joyce, that speech by Cohn, which basically says, we do not view the world as a community of nations. We view it as a series of competing interests, and we have our interests at stake first. How profound a shift is that for the U.S.?
Well, it is a big shift for the U.S. You know, he is going to weaken America's position in the world. That is no doubt. And in fact, even his daughter has been advising him not to pull out of Paris. But having been at NATO and at the G7, we knew, we could feel it, that this was going to be the American stand. He didn't want to say it right away. He left saying, see you guys later. I'll tweet in the week. You'll find out what I think. Right. We all knew that. The question now going forward is, okay, America pulling out, Paris still has some heft, but what if they, other countries start pulling out of Paris? It's a little bit like, take the example of Brexit. Britain pulling out of Brexit, out of Europe, okay, they can withstand the blow. Another country pulling out of the EU, will the EU even be able to withstand that blow? So the question now is, who's next? Will there be another country pulling out? And if another country does pull out, is this the unraveling of Paris?
Right, and Ali, from an economic argument, it was interesting to see Donald Trump make the economic argument that the Paris Climate Accord is a disaster for the U.S.?
You know, there are costs. There's no question. Even in Canada, there are costs to reducing carbon emissions. There may also be remarkable benefits, particularly from technologically engaged countries. So there are a lot of options for America, and particularly when it comes to energy utilities. You know, they can bake it round or they can bake it square, but they bake it for 50 years when they open up a new plant. So what they would like is to have policy that is going to withstand the test of time. The concern here is that the next president of the United States may say, hey, we're back in and we've got to meet these climate goals, and now business is going to have to reshuffle the deck. So they may like it or not like it, but they want some consistency, and that is one thing you do not get from the Trump administration.
Stephanie Levis, let me talk about this bailout. Now the Trump tab is up to $860 million for this package for softwood lumber. This has happened before. 15 years ago, there was $100 million. But this is a pretty big number. And people are wondering, wait a second, now it's real. Should the Canadian government retaliate? And does this start escalating a kind of trade war even before the NAFTA negotiations begin?
It's certainly an opening salvo, I would argue, the NAFTA negotiations, because it signals on the part of the Canadian government what measures they may or may not be willing to take in the event that things don't swing their way. The question then becomes, how many industries are the federal Liberals prepared to bail out? I mean, are we going to go with pharmaceuticals? Are we going to start bailing out IP? At what point do they say, what's negotiable and what was, oh no, we'll just let that go, like, for example, dairy and eggs in TPP, right,
in
the Trans-Pacific
Partnership, right,
where they said, well, okay, we'll sign, but we'll compensate the farmers. So what line are they going to walk going into those negotiations?
Joyce.
Well, let's write another check on the back of taxpayers. Let me play devil's advocate here, right? Because obviously our best maternal instincts are, let's help these people. That's what we all think. We're Canadian. We want to help, right? But at which point, and I agree with Stephanie here, at which point do we stop squeezing the lemon and saying, okay, first of all, this is not Donald Trump, because it happened under other presidents of the United States. This is not the first dispute we've had over lumber. So let's not blame it on Donald Trump. This is a federal government bailout.
If we don't bail them out and give them some dignity, at least for having some kind of jobs, we'll have to bail them out in welfare and bail them out in other ways. So there are costs there, however we do it. And I think what we're seeing here that's beginning to hurt us is where the ideological divide between the United States, between Trump, of course, and us, is starting to hit us in the economy. And we're going to see a lot more of that.
All right, I got 30 seconds, Ali Velshi. Last word to you. We're just trying to see where all this is headed. We are months away from the renegotiation of NAFTA. We're just bailed out.
Right.
The softwood lumber. Where is this going? What does it tell Canada about the President of the United States?
I'm not sure. Far be it for me to say anything contrary to my old boss, Craig Oliver, who I love being on with. I will say that I'm not sure there's that much ideology behind Trump's actions on softwood lumber. As we've said, this has been going on for hundreds of years. The issue here is this is Trump's way of negotiating. He pulls something out. He threatens to rip something up. He imposes something, and it, in theory, is supposed to get everyone to the table. He said at the end of his very dark climate speech that he's willing to renegotiate. He's saying that kind of stuff with NATO. So I think this has got less to do with ideology and more to do with the way Donald Trump operates.
It may be. That ideology just cost Canadians $860 million. All right. I got Ali Velshi from the MSNBC show. Velshi and Rule, great to have you on the program. That's Ali Velshi. But the scrum is staying with us. Our pipeline's dead in British Columbia, with potentially a new NDP green government there. Special guest Avi Lewis will join us on that, and we may take a look at the glitz and glamour from last night's press gallery dinner. I don't know how much glitz and glamour there was, but it's pretty funny. Stay with Question Period.
We are all Quebecers, and therefore we can all say in French and in English, être Québécois, c'est notre façon d'être Canadien. Being Quebecer is our way of being Canadians.
It's back. That's right. The most divisive debate in the country, the one that almost tore Canada apart, has been shockingly reopened by Quebec Premier Philippe Couillard. He argues that Canada's 150th birthday is the perfect time to crack open the Constitution and make Quebec a distinct society. Well, the scrum is back to tackle that one. Stephanie Levitz is back, Joyce Napier is back, Craig Oliver is back, and we now bring in our special guest, filmmaker Avi Lewis, who is the strategic director of The Leap, which called for an end to, among other things, more development of the oil sands. Thanks for being here, Avi, and joining the Scrum. I'm going to start with you. We all remember these debates about the Constitution, the distinct society, Mulroney. Boy, why do you think Philippe Couillard is doing this now?
I think he's feeling pressure from the sovereigntist left. I think he's got Gabriel Nadeau-Dubois fear. We've seen the PQ abandon being a left-wing party, essentially, and become a neoliberal austerity party. And we're seeing the rise of Quebec Solidaire. And all of a sudden, Couillard realizes that young people in Quebec are galvanized, not necessarily by sovereignty, but by a progressive agenda, which is represented in his province now by a sovereigntist party. So I think we may be seeing a reconfiguration of the landscape. It took him a while to get the whole issue that there might be a little problem between Quebec and the rest of Canada. So now he's trying to make up some ground locally.
Well, Craig, here we go again. What do you think about it?
I spent years of my life on an intellectual forced march chasing around constitutional talks. And I'll tell you one thing about them. Whatever nobility they may start in, they end in mud. And what Couillard is doing is being a political powder monkey. That's what they call a guy on a construction crew in charge of dynamite who blows things up. He's going to blow up this whole issue. Everybody will going to get into it. There will be endless fights and squabbles. It could end with defeated governments. It could end with the country up for grabs again, as we've seen in the past. This could be a mess.
All right. If it is a political expediency, Joyce, as Avi argues, is he playing with dynamite, as Craig says?
Absolutely. And I think, yeah, totally. That's a great image. First of all, it's so 1990s, you know. Let me get with the program. That was a long time ago. Those of us who had the pleasure of covering those debates know these long debates about commas or semicolons. It just doesn't work. It's 1990s. Let's bring back shoulder pads and why not Farrah Fawcett hair? I don't know. Why is he digging this out? It could blow up in his face because if indeed Avi is right and he wants to sort of counter this sort of rising conservatism or progressive wave in Quebec, it may also turn against him. Right? The rest of the country doesn't want it. And you don't just open a little bit of a constitutional debate. We all know it. It's going to open it big and wide, and then we're going to put everything in there, equalization, and so on and so forth. I mean, it's not only that. So what is he looking for? I don't know. I've been scratching my head. I can't figure it out.
Well, it's a time of there's big things going on. There's big trade negotiations. I'm sure the federal government is not happy. Justin Trudeau immediately said, we are not interested in this.
Duh.
Like, he was unequivocal. Is this the kind of thing that once you open it, the separatists love it, that, you know, this thing starts and it's uncontrollable?
You know, Joyce talked about how it's so 1990s, but I think it's so 2017. I mean, here we are in this populist revolt scenario around the world while all sorts of voter populations are looking to challenge the status quo. And I think, to Avi's point, there are people that are hungry for change. There are people that are hungry for making things different. And if there is a sense, whether it's economic, whether it's social, whether it's religious, whatever, that the elites, the people aren't speaking for them, that's where you get these populist uprisings, right?
I understand that, but it's Couillard himself that's opened it, right? This is what I don't understand.
But Evan, let us, can we not let the constitution of the country and its discussion be determined by the ennui and historical boredom of the journalist class? Come on, folks. I mean, I covered the referendum for Much Music in 95. We had a show planned for 15 minutes and we were on the air for 5 hours. I've got my own scars. But look, the Quebec never signed the darn thing. It is an open wound in the country. Don't just dismiss it because you're bored of it. Don't say because there are semicolons we have to shy away from it. There's lots of things that could be fixed in that constitution. I think if you start talking to indigenous communities across this country, you start talking to other people, there's lots of appetite to have a better constitution for Canada.
Can they want to opt in when they never opted
out? And I'm not bored of it.
Opted out.
Craig,
so how can they opt in? They've got 3 seats in the Supreme Court. They own a quarter of the Senate. The idea that they somehow have opted out and they want back in, it just doesn't work.
Say it is fair to say that the constitutional wound is not fixed. I guess the question is for Philippe Couillard, why try to do it now? Timing matters in politics. And speaking of timing, at one point, Justin Trudeau had timing on his hand. He had an NDP government in Alberta that said, okay, we'll put a cap on oil sands emissions. We'll buy into your price on carbon. Give us the Trans Mountain, the Kinder Morgan pipeline from Alberta to Burnaby, BC. He had a Liberal government in B.C. said, okay, you know, we'll do that. Now with the results in B.C., which could be an NDP Green government, Avi Lewis, is Kinder Morgan dead?
Yeah, I think it effectively is. I think it might well have been otherwise. There's something called an extraordinary coalition of First Nations that is already in the way, the Treaty Alliance to stop the pipelines. There were going to be court challenges. There were challenges from cities in British Columbia. It was never the sure thing that Notley and Trudeau wanted to present it as. But I think Christy Clark might have lost this election on Kinder Morgan. 60% of the province voted for parties who were very clear on the position. And I think it's revealed. What I'm really excited about in this moment is just that we can refocus the debate on the principles and the facts and the benefits to people in different parts of this land, instead of having politicians blaming the sort of caricature of environmentalists for being against pipelines.
Here's what I don't understand.
It's the people of British Columbia that are against it.
Rachel Notley is an NDP premier. Mark my words, she says, Stephanie, that pipeline will be built. So now you've got an NDP premier in Alberta telling a potential NDP premier in British Columbia, like, showdown, my political life depends on your decision. How does that play out?
I mean, I think it's so fascinating because, you know, the Prime Minister has staked so much on this concept of social license, right, of convincing people to come on side, and his whole argument about environmental benefits require economic benefits and all of these things. And now he's looking down, and how much political capital is Justin Trudeau going to want to spend on this thing?
George. He was asked clearly in Rome, and, you know, he's usually on talking points. It's hard sometimes to get a real answer from the Prime Minister, even his cabinet. And I asked him that question specifically. Are you willing to go against their will? Talking obviously about the NDP Green Coalition. And his answer was crystal clear. It was yes. Those were fighting words coming from the Prime Minister of Canada.
Let's remember that an awful lot of the people who voted for him as a Liberal in British Columbia voted NDP in this election. They are strong environmentalists. Trudeau has a lot to lose here, but he's stuck now. He's got to not just fight for this pipeline, he's got to endorse this pipeline, because he and the pipeline, their fates are entwined.
And Rachel Notley's fate may be entwined as well.
But we're assuming this vote was just against pipelines. Maybe it was just against, they want it changed. Maybe voters there want it changed. Never
mind pipelines. I think there's a much bigger issue here. Evan, when you started the show saying, here we go again, I thought we were going into the pipeline debate. Like, how here we are day after day, month after month, debating these 19th century economic levers. Where is the renewable energy project that stands like a beacon, a nation-building project from coast to coast to coast in this country, that actually announces Canada in the abdication of the United States from real climate progress? We have an opportunity to lead the world in renewable energy. We have extraordinary capacity here, and we have communities across the country that are already doing it on a small scale, because we're missing the big picture. Where's the vision of the 21st century energy economy that could lead in Canada?
But to pay for it, you need to export the oil. And that's the problem that Justin Trudeau
has,
right?
That's just not true. We have corporations hoarding enough money to pay the national debt. There's plenty of money in this Canada.
Although the fate of Rachel Notley might be tied up. If she doesn't get a pipeline and there's a united conservative movement in Alberta, then what happens to Justin Trudeau's national price on carbon?
You know, the price on carbon, we're seeing all the pressure now being framed mostly by, like, okay, I'll say it, Ottawa pundits like you, as pressure from the now retrograde nihilist, denialist United States, that suddenly a carbon price is going to be a hindrance to Canada's economy. Actually, look at what Emmanuel Macron did after Trump pulled out of the Paris deal. He went on national television and he said, engineers, entrepreneurs, I want you to think of France as your second homeland. Come and let's build a renewable energy future together. What do we get from Justin Trudeau? Deeply disappointed.
Right.
There's vision here. There's huge, huge opportunity.
It's true. I got to go, but I will say for Mr. Macron, strong words from a country that has 60% plus of its energy is nuclear energy. I wonder if you'd support that.
Fair enough. And you know how much it costs me to say anything good about that neoliberal creep as well.
It's not something I do readily. That is Avi Lewis. That is Joy Snaker, Stephanie Levitz, and Craig Oliver. I want to thank all of you for being here. Great to have you on the program. A big week ahead, by the way. The government will announce its long-awaited plan for Canada's military. We've got our eyes on that. And on a different note, in a year, when fake news has become a meme, and we're getting it from Avi Lewis right here today, Press gallery journalists and parliamentarians held their annual press gallery dinner last night in Ottawa. It's essentially a chance to roast each other. That's the way I see it anyway. We'll leave you with a few choice moments of that, and we will be back right here on CTV's Question Period in 7 days. Thanks for watching.
I was here last year, as you may recall, and I decided to come back this year because apparently I hate myself. I spent a lot of time shaking hands lately. After that Niles handshake menage with Enrique and Barack, my staff does not take chances anymore. We practice a lot. Plant the feet, square the hips, stick out the jaw, use both arms. You were all in Washington. You saw that handshake was so damn normal, Sean Spicer even forgot my name.
Another criticism of me has been that I smile too much, that it's hard to tell when I'm serious because I'm always smiling. I always have a grin on my face. Now, I admit I do that a lot. It's kind of a resting, pleasant face that I have. Someone even referred to me on Twitter one time as Dimples McCheery. But I want to help the media for you to be able to tell when I'm really worked up, the different range that I can project. I know, Justin, you were a drama teacher, so this is the Andrew Scheer range, okay? This is happy Andrew. This is furious Andrew. Sad Andrew. And I feel your pain, Andrew. Jill and I have been working with the NCC to figure out how we're going to fit 5 kids into Stornoway. I know we can do it, though. We're going to make a bedroom out of John Reynolds' wine cellar and another one out of Rana's shoe closet. And I would like to publicly thank Tom Mulcair for installing that soundproof crying room. Take a moment.
In the meantime, I'm for real going to China this summer, and then I'm going for real to Russia during the 100th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution this year. Yeah, you got to stay on brand. But a lot of people don't know this about me, but I was actually the architect of that revolution. Just saying. Thank you. Bonsoir.